Welcome to Ballyhoo Fiber Emporium, a podcast for fiber artists and producers. I'm your host, Madeline Rosenberg. And first, I'd like to say happy belated International Women's Day. We all rock. And on this day of celebrating all of the fantastic things that women can do and will do, what better guest to have than Stacy Ghose, founder and CEO of Tougher Workwear for Women. I am so, so pleased to have Stacy on the podcast today. I remember sitting in a choir practice a few years back and an article about Stacy popped up. She was just starting out at the time and I thought, man, it would be fantastic if she got that business off the ground. So when she came back across my screen this year, I just knew I had to have her on.
Hi, Madeline.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you.
You are the founder and owner of Tougher Workwear for Women.
I am. I have the distinct pleasure of designing durable clothes for women that actually deserve something that doesn't come in pink or pastel colors and actually fits their bodies.
Imagine that.
I know.
And actually, it's fitting that we are doing this again on International Women's Day.
I know. Happy International Women's Day. It actually kind of was quite fortuitous in that case.
Talk a little bit about your journey creating this company.
I think our experiences from our childhood really shapes who we are. And so for me, I come from a family of farmers that are in Iowa. And so I'm actually about fourth generation or so in, you know, into a farming family. And so what that means is I was born in Iowa. My family did move to California, though, when I was five. But I still had the opportunity to go back to our family's farm over the summers and help out. And I think those memories and those experiences really made a strong impression on me. I've always been someone that likes to be outdoors. I don't like sitting behind a desk. So even founding a company and having to do a lot of desk work is kind of a challenge for me, but I'm able to balance that with being out in the field and interviewing women and doing my own kind of farming and building to satiate that desire. But in any case, I've always wanted to be outdoors. I love working hard. I'm one of those kind of strange people that I love mowing the grass, which is a very Iowan kind of thing to do, because there's something about, you know, doing something, hard labor, and being able to see immediately, you know, kind of the fruits of your labor, if you will. And so I just love that, you know, sense of pride that you get and the skills that you collect through doing things like building things or growing things, et cetera. So how Tougher came about, though, is I hit a point in my life where I just kind of took a step back and said, why am I still buying men's Carhartts in order to do hard work in? Because I would either have to wear my nice jeans or my quasi, you know, jeans that I kind of have in the back for painting or, you know, working hard outside. And obviously they never lasted very long. So I had kind of that trade-off of either you ruin a good pair of jeans that fit you or you have to buy men's Carhartts because they didn't have great options at the stores nearby. And if they did have women's products, it usually was pretty slim pickings or it was in like a style or a fit that just didn't suit me. So I just decided that there wasn't enough options, I should say, for women for workwear. And this is where I wanted to put my effort into, because I've seen women like my grandmother and my aunt and my cousins all do hard work, but then we're still given really small options to choose from. Whereas if you look at men's clothing for workwear, they have 97% of the floor space dedicated to them. And they have over 50 options of pants to choose from in color and styles and fits and sizes, et cetera. And so I just saw a huge social inequity happening there. And I knew firsthand that women worked just as hard as men and needed the same type of clothing, but their needs weren't being met. So I saw both the opportunity to fulfill a social good in the world that would benefit not only myself, but others that I know who work hard, but also address a market gap, you know, and so something that would be beneficial as a business as well. Because, you know, if you start a business, you want to make sure you have customers, right, in order to survive. And so I was fortunate to find something that I felt fit a need and I was passionate about, but also was an opportunity.
It's so exciting, your product. It's so exciting. And you're right. I mean, I hate when I go to the store, my husband hates it because I always complain. Like, he went to buy pants and I'm walking along the rack. He's got like five pairs over his arm and I can't find a single pair of jeans in my body. And I was like, you don't understand how hard it is to be a woman, because you have to try on everything. You can't just walk up and go, oh, that number, and know that it's going to fit you.
Right. Yeah. It's about as fun as shopping for a swimsuit. I mean, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and to be honest and fair to the industry, I know some of the hesitancy by some of the brands to not, you know, really push out women's apparel is because it is difficult. You know, for men, they typically are more square shaped in their hips to their waist ratio. And so they're easier to design for. And so you make less errors and you're not spending money on samples that end up not working and stuff. So I do appreciate how hard it is and difficult it is to design for women, but that's not an excuse. I mean, it's 2018. We figured out how to fly to the moon and now we might be going to Mars. I think we can design a pair of pants that can fit women at this point.
And that has real pockets?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we don't have like decorative pockets. Or you're using cheaper fabric than the men's pants, and so they wear down faster. Oh, and they also cost more at the same time. So not only are you getting an inferior product, but you're also spending more. It's what we call the pink tax on women. And I just knew that if I was able to start a business, this is all the things that I would want to do is to treat women fairly at a good price point that balances something that's accessible and affordable, but also is a well-fitting pant that's going to last them longer than a pair of jeans they could pull off the rack or at the Goodwill.
Mm-hmm. You got a lot of support. Did you have pushback along the way, or tell us about that process?
You know, I thought I would have pushback along the way. To back up, I incubated this company during my MBA program at University of Oregon. So I went into the program knowing that I wanted to launch the company and I wanted that 2-year MBA experience to benefit the company essentially. And it's not to say that you have to go and get an educational, you know, degree in order to do something, but for me, I lacked any business background and I didn't want to be one of the 97% of businesses that fail immediately. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ensure the success. And so when I incubated it, how I started was research. It's where you have to really understand your customer because it doesn't benefit anybody if you design a product that nobody wants or needs and it just doesn't suit them. So I spent a good 6 months combing through data on women that are in the trades. And by trades, I mean women that are in agriculture, construction, fisheries and wildlife, ranching, what have you. It's essentially, it's anyone who's a hard worker, works with their hands, doing skilled labor. So I knew agriculture really well because of my family's background, farming, but I needed to also understand women's needs and whether there was a true market need for women that are in construction and engineering. And what I found was that, yes, across the board, women weren't being served well in skilled trades. And so that's how I really honed in. And then what I did was I interviewed over 400 women across the U.S. and actually even a couple globally and asked them what they did for their occupation, what kind of activities are they doing, what would they like to have as a product. And I initially focused on work pants because that came up all the time. Work pants and work gloves came up as the two most kind of nefarious products to try to find and fit women well, and that didn't come in pink or pastel colors. So I wanted to focus on work pants because that's what I was always having problems with. I was always getting like gapping when I would bend down, and that was embarrassing and it wouldn't fit, or you'd have companies make work pants for women that felt like a skinny jean, and that's not what I wanted. And I wanted deep pockets and I wanted utility pockets on top of that, but didn't want to look like a dude, which is what I heard from other women as well, is they didn't want to look mannish. You know, they didn't want like a super tight cut clothing to wear, but they also wanted something that was flattering, but still functional. And so research was really focused on how to deliver that. And then through a series of conversations and introductions, I was able to, you know, gather these amazing mentors that are veterans in the apparel industry that have worked with great brands like Patagonia and Toad & Co. and Black Diamond and Adidas and Nike, et cetera, and basically learned from them kind of what the process was to develop a product. What I did from there is through a series of introductions that they helped make on my behalf, I was able to work with a great pattern maker to help design our first fit style for women, which is kind of for women that have athletic quads or a butt and hips. That's our first fit style that we developed for our Kickstarter launch. And then I was also fortunate that one of my advisors and mentors also happened to be the designer of our work pants for our Groundbreakers. And I thought she did an amazing job, and she has a great background and having worked with Carhartt and Patagonia and Toad & Co. and a lot of other great companies as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You were talking about how major companies don't want to go through that process of trying to fit different body types. Mm-hmm. What was that like for you? Did you trial run with women in industries, or did you just kind of have like a variety of women come in so you could try what you had and then they left, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit like trying to catch a chicken, you know. It's definitely attainable, but you're going to have to work really hard at it. And there's going to be a lot of misfires and kind of back and forth and going back to the drawing board and redoing things. What traditionally happens in apparel is companies will hire what they call fit models. So these are women that are paid to try on clothes from a brand, and they are a certain height and a weight, and they basically, their job is to maintain those biometric data points. So they need to maintain weight, because even if you go 5 pounds up or down, that's actually even represents one size up and down. So, you know, for a good reason. Yeah, exactly. So the interesting thing about what I learned about the apparel industry through this, and what I love about being an outsider, is I can ask questions on why do we do things that way? Why not do it this way? So I, instead of hiring a fit model who traditionally is always a size 6, which would be like a waist size 26 or 27, I actually designed the pant kind of in the profile or silhouette that I was looking for, because mm-hmm. a lot of other women that I spoke to who shop for men's pants, there's a reason why. It's because we have larger quads, mm-hmm. you know, so we need to, and women's pants generally don't account for women having muscular quads at all, or a butt from lifting and all that kind of muscular strength that you gain from skilled trades or labor. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first silhouette that I wanted to focus on. And so I sought out women in the trades to do fit testing on the sample pants that we developed, who were actually in construction or were farmers or woodworkers, and would describe themselves in the same way that I would, and who had the same issue that they would go to the men's aisle to find pants to fit them. But then they had to, of course, wear belts and stuff, because you get the hips to fit, but then the waist obviously is too big. So mm-hmm. I was looking for someone that had the same struggles as I did and who would describe themselves similarly. And that's not going to be a perfect science. And even women who would describe themselves as curvy, that shape really is, it differentiates across each person on what that means to them. Mm-hmm. In fact, through our Kickstarter, you know, I would sometimes get messages from women who would see our advertisement, you know, about pre-ordering our Groundbreaker work pants and helping us fund our production run. And they would say, well, your curvy is not actually curvy. My waist is this and my hips are that. It needs to be like at least 4 inches wider around the hips in order to really be curvy. And so that was even an interesting kind of a cultural discussion that was happening with women on even how we self-describe our bodies. There's a huge variance even underneath that umbrella term of what's curvy and what's a straight cut, mm-hmm. you know, that I didn't initially anticipate. And it has, you know, a lot of strong emotion for some women, because they're tired of being ignored and not designed for, if you will. Mm-hmm. Their frustration is totally understandable, and it echoes my own, not being able to find pants in the women's section, but then not really fitting the men's either. A trial and error, you know, we're not going to get it right for everybody, and nor could we be a brand that is all things to all people. At some point, you know, as one of my mentors says, you have to put a stake in the ground and say, kind of, here's the type of woman that this fit style would go for. It's not going to be a bullseye for everybody, unfortunately, but at least we're adding a unique voice, or in this case, a unique size or fit profile mm-hmm. that's not currently being offered by other brands. So women will find their fit through different brands at some point through kind of their own trial and error, which isn't fun. But, you know, once they find a brand that their pants fit well and they know what size it is, or even their shirts, for instance, you have a customer for life as long as you keep making great product.
So do you have plans in the future to expand that apparel line?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have a couple products that I'm excited. We have designs for. I just need to get a little bit more cash flow going so that I can hire people to help to develop that product and do some product samples for. I can't say what they are yet, but I look forward to having that happen soon.
Cool. If you can't keep your clothes on, then like you're not going to do
your job. That's an opportunity to, like I was mentioning, do some good. Looking for the areas where people have overlooked, and you know, women at large are certainly one of those, but it could be occupations as well that don't get maybe as much attention as, you know, construction, for instance.
Yeah.
In business school, we talk about looking for those blue ocean opportunities where there's not a, kind of like blood in the water. Everybody's trying to compete with each other and it's a dogfight. So you're trying to get out and move into little niches or segments where there's less competition or really focus on, you know, and you're able to worry less about having the slickest marketing plan like the next competitor that you're facing. And you can just focus on the product itself and the problem that you're trying to solve, which is nice. It allows you to be a little more creative and innovative and try things that might, you know, fail at first, but then you eventually get them right. I mean, clothing is a barrier. If you don't have the right equipment, how are you supposed to participate? And we saw that in athletic before Nike and some of those other major brands really woke up to the fact that women needed athletic gear too. Girls, they didn't participate in sports. But then when they started making basketball shorts and tops and running clothes, et cetera, then you saw, you know, women, I think, are almost the majority now of those that run marathons or do long distance running. And it's because, you know, you actually start designing a product that they can use. So it's not like they weren't able to. It's just, you know, they weren't able to comfortably do it without any major struggle or frustration or embarrassment, as is the case with your butt gapping when you're trying to shear a sheep. And I know there are some good men out there. I mean, I've spoken with them. You were asking me prior whether I've met resistance when I started this company. And I was surprised that I haven't met as much resistance as I thought. And in fact, when I went to business competitions to try to get startup capital to get things going for this company, I would have predominantly about 95% of the judges, you know, in those competitions were men. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, there's probably no chance I'm going to win. they're not going to really understand this problem for women. But that honestly was not the case. And I would win competitions or place pretty near the top. And it's because they had sisters and they had mothers and they had wives and daughters, you know, and so they were able to kind of come to this sense of fairness that they were getting more privilege in society as far as apparel goes than their wife or their daughter. And what they saw with that was less opportunity for them because they couldn't participate in the same way that they could. Having the right type of clothes and actually fitting your body is hugely important for opening up those opportunities for women. And I'm thankful for the good men that are out there, and there are a lot of them. I feel like obviously the news will focus on the ones that aren't behaving well. But I do want to give a shout out to the men that really advocate for the women and girls in their lives, because, you know, we need people on both sides, you know, obviously helping out in that fight.
Yep. Talking about clothing that doesn't fit, it's another freezing day here in Kentucky. And I'm not wearing any gloves, and my hands are chapped and my fingers were all red because the only gloves I have aren't really great for dexterity. And likewise, my husband's gloves, the fingers are too wide, so they just slide around and I can't do anything. But you have created women's gloves that
I did, yeah,
on them and aren't in pastel colors.
Thank God. I'm so sick of going to Home Depot and that's all you get is pink gloves. There's two styles and they're all in pastel and then they're nylon, which isn't very durable. And then the rest, kind of like when you go and look at, you know, sneakers, the men's section always seem to have more styles and different products than women. Yeah, the gloves, like I mentioned when I was interviewing women, it was work pants and then work gloves that came up the most often as far as women having difficulty, you know, sourcing for themselves and that performed as well as men's stuff and then fit their hands well. So I was fortunate when I was pitching in Bend, Oregon to run across a gentleman who worked with a manufacturer that helped him do a rappelling glove. And he said I should check them out. So I was able to do an on-site visit to the manufacturer, you know, check out work conditions and also look at sort of some of the options for leather and what sort of customization and design I'd be able to do. Because for me, I didn't want to be one of those companies where I go to a factory overseas and they have a stock product that they make and all they do really is just sew somebody's label onto it. And then that's your company's, you know, your brand's gloves. For me, I actually wanted a glove that truly was designed for women and it wasn't just something I slapped a tag on and said, here's your women's work glove. So it was great because they're, you know, it's a real glove making operation. You know, they don't do small, medium, large sizing because those are really ambiguous and doesn't tell you anything. So if you want to find a legit glove, they'll have the sizes in roll sizes. So we offer size 6, 7, 8, and 9, and soon we'll actually have size 10s. And what those numbers mean is the inches. So it's 6 inches from your wrist to your middle finger on your dominant hand. And it's also the circumference of your palm, not including your thumb, and whatever the largest of those two measurements, that's your glove size. So generally women will have 6 inches, 7 inches, 8 inches, or 9 inches for either their circumference or that length across their hand. And that's so helpful for women because now they don't have to worry about whether are they a medium in this brand, are they a small, or are they a large. What I really pride myself on is that we're a company that uses real measurements. so that you can tell whether or not something's going to fit you. It really kind of alleviates some of the guesswork of shopping, which I just detest, you know, trying to figure out whether a size 10 or an 8 from a brand is really what will fit me, or do I need to go up and down from there? So that's why also our Groundbreaker work pants come in waist and inseam, and those are in inches. You have more certainty about what you're getting. So luckily, yeah, this glove manufacturer did things the right way, how they sized their gloves. And what I also liked is the fact that I could say, I want a palm patch on this for added durability. I want this trim on it. I want to be able to make the glove this way. And I also want to put a clip or a buckle, as we call it, on the glove so that people can click their pair together like we do with ski gloves.
Mm-hmm.
Because women were worried about paying retail $59 for our gloves, for a nice pair of gloves, and then having one of those gloves fall out in the field, you know, somewhere, and then they can't find it. And that was like a common story that women shared, is why they also were hesitant to actually buy well-fitting, well-made gloves that last longer, is because they were just always scared of actually losing one of them, you know, while they're working. And so I just looked at a pair of my snowboarding gloves, and I'm like, why aren't we doing this for work gloves, especially ones that cost more than just the cheap $12 that you can get at a garden store? It's just those little touches and those thoughtfulness, I think, that women appreciate. And the fit, most women that have tried it, they become surprised at what a well-fitting glove actually feels like once they do. Because as you noted, women's hands aren't in the same proportion as men's hands. Men's hands tend to have wider palms and fatter fingers, you know, or wider fingers, and then shorter finger length. Women's hands, we tend to be more narrow in the palms and fingers, but then longer.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, women aren't going to fit men's gloves, but that's kind of the choice that we've been left because, again, this was a product that not a lot of companies were even putting a lot of, you know, brain cells into thinking about what women could possibly want, you know, in this area. I chose deer skin. I looked at buffalo, elk, and goat skin, actually, are two other leathers that I might be bringing in soon as an option for women. Why I chose deer skin is because it's a very supple leather. So it gives you that tactile feeling in your fingers that you need when you're working with tools or if you're doing planting or anything where you need to know kind of spatially where your hands are, what your fingers are doing. But what's also nice about deer skin is I would call mid-duty glove. So it can take some abuse. I've had women that chainsaw on it and do logging. I've had a rancher in New Mexico who's burped cattle with them, repaired fencing with it, and all sorts of things. So I landed on deer skin because it was a lightweight leather, but had a good medium duty kind of durability. But the tactile sense in that was just sky high. And that's what really women were looking for, was that precision. I went to a women's only agricultural conference in Portland, Oregon. And I did bring a pair of buffalo gloves and a pair of deerskin gloves just to see which ones would be preferable for the women there. And it was 99% deerskin. Buffalo is a great leather. It's hard wearing. You definitely would want to use it if you're bucking hay. But the bad thing about it is it's just such a thick leather that you just, it makes your fingers feel a little bit, you know, wider, and you kind of lose that sense of being able to feel what your hands are doing and stuff. But we are looking at, like I said, goat skin or elk, perhaps as a different leather to also bring in, because we're having some feedback from women that work kind of in more thorny environments with brambles and stuff. And goat skin is pretty well known to be good about deflecting thorns and stuff, so you're not tearing up your gloves too much and stuff. And the deer skin does pretty well. I do have a farmer here who's a cut flower farmer, and she uses them around her rose bushes for clipping thorns and planting, and hers have survived. They still look great, but other people, you know, obviously if they're working with blackberries and stuff, deer skin isn't a leather that's as suitable for that. So that's why we're looking at maybe another type of leather, so that women that need a little more robust durability have that option.
Awesome. The entire glove is deer hide?
Except for the buckle, yeah, that clips them together. Everything is made out of the deer skin, yep.
Awesome.
Yeah, one thing I didn't mention, but it's nice about deer skin too, is especially here in the Pacific Northwest, we get a lot of rain. And I don't know if you've ever used cheap cowhide gloves before, but if they get wet, they dry brittle and usually kind of break at that point. Deer skin is an awesome leather because if they get wet, they dry soft. So you don't have to worry about them becoming hard and brittle.
I mean, it irritates any man when he loses a glove, but it's also easier to swallow, like you said, when you can buy, you know, a 3-pack of work gloves for $20.
I get questions sometimes on why I don't use other types of fabrics. And usually it's people, obviously, that care about animal welfare and not using leather. But the thing about leather that's great is it's a long-lasting material. And so for me, part of the reason why I try to use good fabrics or great materials that are long lasting or wearing is because I don't want it to be a disposable item, something that you just toss into the landfill and don't think about, because products like that don't break down really easily, you know, over hundreds of years and stuff. And so for me, it's, if you buy better, you can buy less, and that also means less waste. And for me, I'm always trying to be really cognizant on not being such a disposable economy, you know, where we make something as cheaply as we can out of whatever materials, but, and if it breaks in a couple of years, oh well, they'll just throw it away and then they can buy another one. I've always hated that. I've always loved the stuff that my grandmother had in her home, because she had a toaster, I think, from like the 50s or 40s, and that thing lasted for decades and never had to be fixed. And if it did break, you could take it apart and fix it. And those were sort of the values that I grew up really enjoying. You know, even if someone's not an environmentalist, if you look at it from a financial standpoint, it saves you actually money to buy better at the front end versus buying all these cheap gloves that you know you're not going to hold on to, or they're not going to last. It's a waste on your time of having to re-up all the time. And it's also financially, over the long run, you're spending a lot more money, and they're not as comfortable. Wouldn't you rather wear something that fits you well, like a glove, if you will, in the case of our work gloves? It is a huge kind of psychological and physical difference in your performance when you have something that actually fits you well and feels good. You perform better than you did before, and you actually feel good about what you're doing. I never got excited when I thought about having to do landscaping around my house and having to put on those men's Carhartts, because I knew they were going to be huge on me and they were going to be hot and sweaty by the time I was done. And I just, that's what I hated about doing those things, that I actually really enjoyed, like I said, mowing the grass and doing all this weeding. But that was what I did not enjoy, was having to put on the stuff in order to protect me. And it shouldn't be that way.
And so you developed your fabric that you wanted for the Groundbreaker pants with those things in mind.
Yeah, it was befuddling to me that we're here, like, again, we're in 2018 now, and this is even back in 2015 when I started this. I was just like, we have all these amazing fabrics out there that have been developed. Why are we still using, you know, the thickest, most unbreathable fabric known to man? And it's because it's cheap. It's cheap to source and make, and then, you know, you're able to sell it at a low price point. There is value there for the budget buyer, for sure. But I just was never comfortable in that. And so I was really fortunate through a series of introductions to talk to a fabric expert who, her brain should be in the Smithsonian. She knows everything about fabric known to man, mm-hmm. or woman, I should say. I was able to sit down with her and say, this is what I want to use the fabric for. It needs to be hard wearing. These are women who are working hard with their hands, working out in the field or the shop, you know, or even backyard. But it needs to be breathable. It needs to be lightweight. What sort of things would you recommend? And she was able to come up with kind of a blend of different kind of fiber properties that would work really well. And I was able to get in touch with a gentleman who had connections to an overseas fabric manufacturer. And I was able to describe what the fabric blend should be. And he was able to work with his manufacturing facility to create that for us. So it's a great fabric. It's a lightweight fabric that has 1% stretch in it. I know earlier you're talking about, you know, too much stretch is not great, because, you know, your pants can fall down from being too stretchy. I didn't want excessive stretch either, because it also makes the fabric less durable. I balanced essentially, you know, a cotton poly blend that had a nice good hand to it, mm-hmm. that was soft with a little bit of stretch, enough so that it was comfortable on your body, but not too stretchy that it would blow out or eventually stretch out too much. And the cool thing about our pants is that they weigh over a pound less than a pair of Carhartts, but I had the fabric lab tested against a pair of Carhartts, and ours was just as strong as theirs. I was elated when I got that lab report back, because here we're able to make a lightweight pant that is just as strong, but as breathable. I asked for a DWR, a durable water-resistant finish on it, so that for, you know, folks like us that work in the Pacific Northwest or in rainy environments, it will bead water, so you're not completely drenched, you know, when you get to the job site or the field.
Mm-hmm.
For here, where we get kind of the light rain in the morning or kind of off and on throughout the day in Oregon, these will keep you pretty dry, which is nice.
And then you've still got that waistband that's a nice nod to not being too masculine.
Thank you. Yeah. A lot of the products out there, it almost seems like nobody bothers to make things look good. I always felt about women in construction or farmers, et cetera, and you tend to get a lot of like the browns and the tans and what have you. But I don't know about you, but a lot of women I talk to and like myself, we love pops of color. It's why I think we gravitate towards certain types of clothing that have color in it, because especially on kind of overcast days like we have here in Oregon, that's a nice little contrast against the gray that you see. And so I chose a bandana type waistband on the interior that was teal as a nod also to the women that have worked hard in the past. You know, bandanas have a strong tie to kind of country and women who are farmers or, you know, who worked hard through the industrial age, et cetera. And so I wanted to make sure that I paid my ode to them, but I updated the color so it wasn't just a red color bandana, something that was also modern and had kind of a fun color pop to it. Otherwise, the pant would just be a gray pant. And so this is kind of a way to pump it up a little bit and just show that we're being mindful and thinking about tailoring something specific for women.
So what comes next for you?
You know, right now I'm busy meeting with folks that are interested in investing in Tuffer. And so my hope is that I'll be able to acquire some investors that will help us grow and develop some of those products that are in my dreams right now and on my sketches and stuff that I have. It's sort of seeking capital, you know, just like any other enterprise. That's the lifeblood of helping you grow. And so that's the focus. But also, as I mentioned, we're also looking at expanding our glove line to include different leathers so that women can use them for different tasks, whether it's light duty or mid duty or heavy duty. And then certainly delivering the work pants to the folks that supported our Kickstarter that was funded, you know, within 6 days of us launching it, which was incredible. Making sure that we get those pants off to all the supporters in the spring when it becomes available through our manufacturer. So not too much. Yeah, not anything at all.
Well, that's awesome. You have come so far, and I wish you every success moving forward. For people who are interested in supporting you, your products can be found where?
Our work pants, you can pre-order through our website at tuffer.com, and that's T-O-U-G-H-E-R. And if you're interested in work gloves, we also sell those through tuffer.com. And if you're in Oregon, we have 8 different retailers that carry them. And you can just go to our website and click on the list of retailers and find those locations.
Fantastic. And you also have social media presence. You are very present on Instagram.
Yeah, I love Instagram. It's great. Like, just the visuals that you get from other people. I've been fortunate that I've been able to have people follow our channel, but also been really inspired by the other folks. So if people join our Instagram channel, generally it's been an opportunity for me to learn more about that person who's added themselves. So I've, you know, been able to now meet women who are in forestry or, like you mentioned, sheep shearers in New Zealand, all these places. So it's been able to like widen my global scope of women who work hard across the planet, not just here in Oregon or in the US. I love Instagram for that, because then you really get a peek into their lives. You know, it's not just a post in text, it's all visuals, and you're able to really kind of see the faces of the people that you design for and who inspire you.
And your products are so thoughtful, not only in how they're designed for women, but in the greater good, like you said, of the social justice in helping all women and in making sure that working conditions are acceptable and material stamped on and things like that. So really start to finish from conception right through end wearer. These are really good, sustainable products.
Yeah, I mean, I try to think about what would you make for your sister or your grandmother or your mom? That's something that you would be proud of, that you would meet with them and you would feel good about what you're doing or your process. And so that's kind of the yardstick that I use, is what I'm doing, something that would make my family proud. And that's what I use to guide me. Also, again, on the sustainability piece, actually using high quality products to pay Mother Earth, you know, a little bit of a favor and lessen the burden on waste, things that really kind of gobble up resources that are finite. So making sure that you're a good steward with what you're given.
This has been fantastic chatting with you.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to do it. And thank you again for reaching out. And I'm excited to hear any feedback that you have from listeners. If they have suggestions for me or comments, they can even email me directly at Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at tuffer.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much. All the best to you in this upcoming season. Hopefully we'll see those additional gloves on your website soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Buckle up. It's going to be a fun 2018. So I can't wait to share more.
And happy International Women's Day.
Same to you. Yeah. Thanks for, and by the way, thanks for everything that you do. I think it's incredible. And I look forward to learning more from folks like you and what your day-to-day is like and how people like me can make your lives better, and or even just, you know, get a hand on your products that you make as well.
women need to be supporting each other. And I think for a really long time, fashion and society has told us that we don't have a voice, or they've didn't have a voice when we do speak up. So having people like you in industries that really benefit so many of us is so critical. The more that we're heard, the more we're willing to speak out.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, we all look to each other. You know, we can amplify each other's voices. Sometimes you have to do that multiple times in order to get your message through. Always happy to do that and support other people that have shown such generosity to Tougher as well.
Take care.
All right, take care, man. Bye.
Bye.
Not only do we run the world, we are changing it one woman at a time as we connect and share our experiences. Stacy is interested in hearing from lady sheep shearers, because if you've ever sheared a sheep, you know it's almost impossible to keep your pants on. They make shearing specialty clothing for men, but they don't make it for women. So wherever you are worldwide, email Stacy at Stacy, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at tougher.com, and give her your input. What do you need? What kind of workwear would be helpful for you? And this goes for other industrial career paths as well. If there's an industry that you're in that you don't feel is being served, then reach out. And not just to Stacy, but in general, reach out. Let your voice be heard. We have powerful voices, as we've learned in the last year, more so if we speak together. Actually, I was talking to a male friend of mine this last week about how everybody seems to want their voices heard these days, but they're all shouting at the same time. And so even if they're heard and somebody says, okay, well, what do you want? They've been shouting for so long that they have to stop and regroup and think, what do we really want? And by the time they come back with an answer, another shouting person has filled the void. So nobody's needs seem to be getting met these days on a large scale. We can make a difference for others. We can have an impact in the world. We can see that differences are made for our own lives. And that all begins with sharing your story. I think it was really awesome to hear that Stacy enjoys interacting on Instagram, not just for posting, but for seeing what kind of people follow her and getting to know their stories. She's such a thoughtful individual. I'm just really, really glad that I had the chance to connect with her. So thank you again, Stacy, for being on the podcast. I should note that Beyonce is featuring Pearl and Cinnabon in the intro and outro to today's podcast episode. That's pretty awesome because they are two women of the sheep variety who have had a lasting impact in our flock and lives. We're waiting for another round of Cinnabon's grandchildren and possibly great-grandchildren this year. And Pearl's first grandchildren will be on the ground. It's nice to remember them. Powerful women come in all shapes and sizes, two-legged and four. The other two-legged women on Ballyhoo Farm have been hard at work laying eggs. The goose does not seem to have it together. Misty's been laying in the coop, which is great, but she's not setting a nest. She laid 12 eggs. Eula ate all but four of them. She doesn't lay in the same spot in the coop all the time, so she doesn't really have a proper clutch. She lets the chickens sit on top of them and wanders off, and they come back and the chickens have gotten bored. We may not have any goslings this year. Mama Duck made two nests in the garage, I guess, in an attempt to evade Eula. I snuck two goose eggs in her nest just in case, because she's a good mama. Snickers became an official farm dog yesterday. She dug up, caught, and killed her first mole. Hooray, I guess. As pesky as moles are, it's a really horrible way to die. I guess there is no good mole death. Next week is a huge week here on the farm. Not only is Alex going to shearing school, again at University of Kentucky Sheep Research Unit, it is the 20th and 21st, so followed by setting forth and trying to find bodies to continue practicing on. And if you do go to that school and you are interested in continuing to shear, please contact me. We are setting up a shearing crew. The 22nd, the day after shearing school finishes, we are expecting lambs. Also on the 17th, rain or shine, we're having a spring activity. We're going to make prayer flags here on the farm. You're welcome to join. You'll have to look on Facebook to find out what time that is. I think it's like 10:30 to like 2 or 3 or whenever. If it's raining, we'll do it in the Emporium. If it's sunny, we'll do it outside. So we're just going to make some flags that you can string in your yard or in your garden or wherever you want and have a positive thing and welcome spring, I hope. Then the following weekend, either the 24th or 25th, we will be shearing between 4 and 6 sheep. Kind of depends. The boys that are going to the butcher on the 29th will need to be sheared. And don't feel too bad for them because Ozzy needs to go. And the 2 Finn Cormo rams have one heck of a headache. I've never had a sheep that I allowed the horn to grow into the head. I've always been vigilant and kept it from getting to that point. But these boys, we knew their destiny. I could see the way those horns were turning and that their tails were too long. And I did make some effort to sell them as wethers, but nobody was interested. I knew they were going to the freezer and it can't come soon enough from a horn standpoint. They're going to be pretty miserable before too long. Passover starts on the 30th. Easter is on April 1st, and we will have lamb available for both of those celebrations if you so choose to partake. Contact me and we'll arrange pickup. To that end, farm shares are available, egg, lamb, produce, or a la carte, which gives you $300 worth of farm credit for the year, and you can pick and choose from week to week which products you're interested in, and I'll even apply it to wool. So if you're interested in getting a dozen eggs every other week and you know you want some vegetables and maybe some select cuts of meat and maybe some yarn, it's a really great option for you. You can use it towards cut flowers or herbs or anything that we offer. Go online to the website, ballyhoofiberemporium.com/farmshares to learn more. We also have t-shirts now. That's new. You can be part of Ballyhoo's shearing crew. $20 t-shirt, any size, small, medium, large, or extra large. They are printed in Kentucky, making them Kentucky proud products. They feature our logo on the back. You can check those out on the website in the shop as well. And last and most importantly, I'm slogging away on the grant application for the mill. I do have a letter of intent ready. If you are a producer and think that you might like to let me have a crack at your fleeces, I would certainly appreciate the support. That's all it is, just a letter saying that you support my project and that you are interested in doing business when the time comes. I will be doing a Kickstarter. More to come on that. Stay tuned. I've got our assistant putting together a mailing list. So for those of you who have attempted to subscribe to my attempted list before, hopefully that's going to be a regular monthly thing. As it says, when you visit our website, ain't nobody got time to spam you. We got stuff to do. And now, thanks to Stacy and Tuffer, we have pants and gloves to do it in. So have a great week. Stay awesome. And remember, spin everywhere. What do we run? We run the world.